1800 938 007, our free phone number. Text WhatsApp 083 311 3311.
For every problem, there's a solution. Dear Phil, on Tip Today with Phil Prendergast.
The lady with all the solutions.
Oh, I just wish I had.
We were just saying off air that the world is just in a state of chasses, isn't it?
It is. It's mad, with the wars and all this carry-on that's going on between countries, and all that's going on even with here, with people being relocated, not having housing, not being sufficiently, people getting eviction notices. Oh, it's just, such a heap at the moment. You would worry and fret for people.
And, you know, with your political background and all, is this the worst it's been?
I think it is, friend, because, and maybe it's just because I'm the age I'm at, but I just think that there's not been, like, I've listened to all of the government partners, the ones that are not in government but that are elected to Dáil Éireann and to the Senate, and I've listened to all that they're saying, and they can talk and they can talk, and then our permanent government. And like, if we walk around and look at the amount of vacant properties, misused convents, say, that are all boarded up down in Carrick, any of the buildings that could be repurposed to give people somewhere to live, to give them a bit of dignity, a bit of continuity, a bit of support, I think it would be a very good day. And I'm not dissing people. There are people that try very hard, and the housing department. And I do remember being on the housing and social policy back in the day, which wasn't today or yesterday, I can tell you. And there seemed to be a better system, because I even remember where I went to visit one woman who was living in a flat in a village. And I went to it, and the access to that was an outside iron stairway. And she had a 2-year-old crawling around with a window that was at that level of this building, that if the child got out, it would definitely fall because it was an open stairwell. And I remember there was a very quick response by the council to that being taken off as a recognisable property that could be rented. But look, it's a subject for a whole programme in itself.
I was reading this morning, nearly 70,000 homes could be built on state lands across the country. But then you drill down into that, less than 10,000 of those could be built in the next 10 years. I mean,
that's nuts, you see. And I think as well, we need to rethink about how we're supplying houses. The traditional model of a house back in the day would have been kind of probably okay, because there was very big families. So a 3-bedroomed house, where, like in our case, that where I lived, there was no, it was incremental because there was a baby every year. So obviously we started off, there wasn't 11 of us, but there was 11 by the time we were finished. So there was a few of us, you know, get off there and go and do nursing and go off and do whatever. But so the houses at the moment are not really built for the kind of families we're having now.
Smaller families.
We're having much smaller families, so they probably need smaller units. And
good. Yeah, I hadn't thought about that.
Well, it's just, you don't need the same footprint for a smaller house, and it gives people a space as well where you can have. There's a lot of people now very innovative with outside spaces, and, you know, building on a pergola and being able to have an outside room to be using, and sort of just having a sensible approach to how.
Where is that kind of vision? Where do you hear anybody that you would say is the new Whittaker or Noel Brown or somebody, or even Dunham O'Malley? You know, is there anybody with that kind of vision?
Yeah, but probably there are, but they're just not maybe thinking outside the box. And the box being 3-bedroomed houses really aren't a model that we should be doing now. It should be more about maybe building apartment blocks where there's going to be sort of services that are available, that maybe centrally, where people can come and go. I know there's a whole issue and we have to rethink, but now we're a kind of multicultural society on every level. And Clonmel would be a prime example where we have such multicultural diversity. And we really do have that, and there's great integration in the community and all of the communities across it. So I don't think it's unfeasible to think about, well, how could we make a better system.
But as you say, you're walking by empty premises all of the time. You know, places that are deteriorating constantly,
and you seem falling to bits. It's very upsetting.
Anyway, on to our letters. The first one, it says, Dear Phil, I'm a woman in my 20s. I've been attending the local gym for over a year now. I go about four times a week and always tend to go after work in the evening. I try not to talk to anybody there and just try to get in and get out generally. My problem is, for the last couple of weeks, a man who has just joined is making a pest of himself. When he first started, he asked me a question about one of the machines and I helped and was friendly. But since then, every time he comes in, he tries to stop and have a conversation with me and just yesterday asked me if I'd like to go for a coffee sometime. I said no and thought that might give him the hint, but he still pesters me every day, just trying to make conversation and join me in routines. I've tried using headphones and pretend not to hear him, but he'd stand in front of me and wave if I don't respond. I should mention, too, that this man is about 20 years older than me, and I find it really inappropriate. I would change my time going to the gym, but it's really the only window I have free in the day to go. How do I get this guy to take the hint and just to leave me alone?
Well, she raises a very valid point, but what one thing I would say there is there should be a code of conduct issued to any person joining a gym about what is and what isn't appropriate, and that comes to being inappropriate gym wear to being, you know. But she said that she's not qualified to show someone how to use a machine,
right?
Because that would invalidate the gym's insurance and they have to have a valid insurance.
Good point. Yeah.
So what she should do is talk to the management or her trainer and say that, look, I just want to do my routines. I want to come and I want to go and I don't really want this to be an outlet for socialising. Now, there are people that absolutely get on fine socialising with people that go to the gym with them and it's all good. But the manager or the people in charge in the gym should have a code of conduct that they have an expectation that, you know, you don't talk to someone else when they're using gym machines because they're heavy machines and you can make mistakes if you're not using it appropriately or if you need training in it yourself, but certainly not to show someone, oh, well, how do you use this machine? You have to say, to go down there and talk to the trainer guy or girl and they'll come and show you how to use all the machines. Thanks, I'm just going to get on with my routine and kind of cut him dead. Mm. I mean, he will get the hint, but there is a whole series in relation to gym insurance that you have to have.
Right.
And it's very, you have to be very safe. So for even this girl to feel that this man is after pointing her out now, and he probably is just being friendly.
Well, that, I was just going to say that. It might be just that
he's being friendly. Just wants to be friendly. But standing in front of her and waving, but she's trying to use the machine. And it's like when you're using the machines, you certainly don't want anyone looking at your wobbly bits.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
And even those people that have pure, solid muscle,
they still don't want
it. They don't want it. So when you're going to the gym and you're doing your routines, you just want to get on with it and do it.
Yeah, she says he's 20 years older than her and she finds it really inappropriate. So dynamic there as well?
Yeah, it's just that I suppose she's just not comfortable that somebody is coming in and upsetting her routine. She's a gym goer. She's a gym bunny, by the sounds of it, goes four times a week. And she just wants to get in there. But the advice I would give her is don't show anyone how to use any machines because she's not qualified to do it.
Right.
And she's not insured to do it.
And she said when she did so, at first she was friendly to him and that obviously gave him some sort of a passport then to say,
well, it could be that he was just innocently being sort of saying, oh, this girl looks
grand. Well, he did ask her for coffee, though.
He did, but, you know, coffee is not a sackable offence, you know. I mean, do you know what I mean? It's,
I know, yeah.
You know, but anyway, she's not comfortable with that and she's annoyed over it. So she should go to the gym boss and say to her, listen, I want to come in and do my routines. I don't really want to be disturbed. I was asked to show someone how to use the machine. Can you just issue a kind of directive or a code of conduct or sort of an issue that there's no other gym person that's going to that gym qualified to show you how to use machines. It has to be a trainer.
Okay.
Because those people are qualified and experts in all of those machines and how they work.
And is it worth sticking into that directive as well? Is that, you know, it's a personal thing. People are in the gym and they don't generally want to sort of socialise and something.
Yeah, it's not even, you see, I suppose you're being too pedantic if you're going down that route because you're trying to cover every single thing. Whereas this girl just needs to change her attitude towards him and just say, listen, if you have any problems with the machines, go up and ask the trainer. I just want to get on with my routine.
Okay,
and
enough.
He'll take the hint.
You hope. All right, our second letter. Dear Phil, my nerves are shot after Mother's Day just gone.
I don't know if it's our nerves that should be shot, but anyway.
and we'll get to the shooting in a moment. But I would love your advice to see if I am the one who is being unreasonable. I've been married for 6 years, and since I met my husband, his mother has always demanded that we spend Mother's Day with her. It's a big affair with a big dinner with all the family, and everybody brings gifts for her. I never had an issue with it before because my own mum passed away when I was so young. It wasn't a day that really meant anything very much to me. But I had my own child, who will be 2 this year, and I feel like I want us to now celebrate the day in our own way. I didn't mind for my first Mother's Day, but this year I suggested that we might do our own thing, and my mother-in-law got all dramatic about it and said that we always do Mother's Day and we can't change it now just because I have a child. I felt it was very unfair, and then when we got there it was made very clear that it was her day, and I felt nothing was made of the fact that it was my first Mother's Day, which was a little bit hurtful. It has been seething in me since, and after the weekend gone I decided I wasn't going to bow down to her anymore. I told my husband that next year we'll call to her in the morning and then do our own thing, but he said that he wouldn't be telling her, and if it's my decision, I can tell her. I know it's a year away, but should I wait until then or set the groundwork now? I'm adamant I am not doing it anymore.
Well, so first of all, she is a mother. Her child will be 2 this year, so the child is not yet 2.
Mm-hmm.
Our child will have no cognizance whatsoever of what Mother's Day is, or anything like it. So I think that she's setting herself up to be annoyed about something that has been a tradition in this family. And if she doesn't really like it or wants to be acknowledged as the mother, there must be others within the family. It seems to be a big issue of family because it's a big family day and all of the family attend.
Yes.
So there surely must be other mothers within that grouping. And look, her child is not going to have any awareness of what Mother's Day is or it being a sort of an acknowledgement. In fact, like, there's a lot of people's Mother's Day are not really relevant because they either don't have children to acknowledge it, so therefore, are they a mother?
Mm.
But it's one of those things, I think, where you could get into a tizzy about something that is a once-a-year occasion. Is it worthwhile into a big, tizzy about that?
Yeah.
Is she jealous of the mother?
Well, I was going to say, do you get the feeling that something else is going on here?
Oh, I do, yeah. I think there's a subplot that we're not being told, but I think she just wants validation to have her child that's not yet 2 to be having the Mother's Day with her because she's the mother of the child. But the child will have no idea.
No, but it's her Mother's Day.
I understand that, but she's trying to start a kind of a thing going on with the husband about you'll be telling her this when this party is coming up and I'm not going because I'm a mother now. Da-da-da.
I love that. That's so real, the way she described that when she said he said he wouldn't be telling her. If it's my decision, you can tell her. So I just love that. So the mother is not a shrinking violet, I would imagine.
She's not a shrinking violet, but like she's been probably the mother of a big family and there's a big deal being made about Mother's Day. But Mother's Day, back in my day, again, I know I'm old, so it doesn't really matter.
Do you hear this?
But no, back in when my mother was there, there wasn't a Mother's Day. There was no such a thing.
Yeah.
You had a birthday and you had Santi and that was it. And the birthday might have been that you got a fairy cake or something. It wasn't the deals like it is now that we have so many occasions throughout the year that have to be validated. And there's Father's Day and there's birthdays and there's all sorts of occasions and anniversaries that have to be celebrated. And like, I mean, there's a huge amount of, when I think about, say, the beautiful cards that people get and everything, and they're beautifully done and they're expensive, but they're thrown into the bin afterwards.
Yeah,
now, they might
be
kept by people and they could be, maybe could have another use for them, I don't know, but there's a lot of tack associated with occasions that have become what we're really probably American or English concepts have. We've loved them all. We adopt them.
Hallmark days and all of that. And so basically you're saying to her, what?
Stop overthinking this.
Yeah.
It is one dinner in the year.
Yes.
And it's your husband's mother. And she doesn't have a mother. So she just needs to cut him some slack. And her child is not yet 2. So we'll have no idea. And it might be nice for them to get together and stop being jealous of the mother that he has because She sadly didn't have one.
Do you see it as being an element of jealousy there?
There could be. It could be that it's just, I never had that, so I don't really know what this big deal is all about. But in this family, it's a big deal. So it's a matter of respecting their traditions, I suppose. And it is only one day.
Yeah. One of our listeners says, oh my God, the first Mother's Day is so special and it should be for that girl. Her mother-in-law shouldn't be the dictator of what happened.
Yeah, but you see, again, it's a matter of thinking, how angry do you want to be, and for a whole year, when you know, she's just been annoyed at the day. And I know her first time is so special, but like, the child has no concept that it's Mother's Day. It doesn't. So look, and anyway, yeah, I respect everyone's views that will differ from my interpretation of how I saw this problem.
Of course. And we have you in because we want your interpretation of it, you see. All right. This is a very interesting one, I think. Not that any of the others are less interesting, but I just find this interesting. It says, Dear Phil, my fiancé and I, we're getting married in 2024 and we're really excited. We're planning a more relaxed affair than the traditional wedding, and we plan to get married in the local park and go back to our place for a barbecue party. Both my husband and I don't drink. That's very royal, isn't it? My husband and I don't drink. And I, in particular, really hate being around drunk people. It's one of the main reasons we are not going down the traditional route with our wedding. But we have made the decision that we don't want any alcohol at our wedding at all. We would prefer for people to just enjoy the day and the food without the messiness of what tends to come with drinking. I ran the idea by my sister and she just laughed and said, good luck with that. Do you think it's unreasonable? It's our wedding day and I don't want to be forking out for something we don't drink and would like to avoid having any drunks here. But it seems in this country, it's completely alien to people. What should we do, Phil?
Well, it's a very strange diktat that there should be no alcohol at any occasion. People should have a choice, and a lot of people do choose not to have a drink on a wedding day simply because they're playing a starring role, or they are the designated driver, or they got the wrong side of the coin or the right side of the coin, or for whatever reason. There's a lot of people that do not drink to excess at weddings. It's not a big drunk fest. They want to do something different, and I think that's nice. Now, they need to find maybe a group of Mormons that will be good to go to the wedding, because I think if they, you know, they've made this big decision that they don't want any alcohol at their wedding at all. And that's not a normal state of affairs either, because it's a diktat, and they will not get people to go. They might go and they'll just wander in and talk around and say, God almighty, it's a beautiful day,
lovely,
and we'll go back to the park, have a bit of fun and have a little bottle in your bag and take a swig every so often when they're not looking. It's a kind of a diktat. It's not probably normal for our society. I respect their right to make that decision, but they will not, I think, it mightn't be as good a day as they think.
I love the sister's reaction. Good luck with that.
Yeah, good luck with it. Because I think, she said, do you think it's unreasonable? I think it's unreasonable to have an occasion that really is very, very special, and also a little bit thinking outside the box, which I absolutely agree with. Go to the local park, get married. You can have a celebrant and they come and do your thing, and it's a lovely affair. And for some people, weddings are not all about drink. And I think she has a traditional mindset where people went to weddings at 11 o'clock in the morning for the mass. And then
the
by
breakfast.
One. Yeah, but it wasn't really the wedding breakfast, because the dinner mightn't happen till 5 or 6 in the evening. And what do you do in the intervening time when you've kind of sat around and spoke to the aunt and the mother law and your one and the babies and what happened and all the rest of it? And the whole setup for weddings was that you should maybe have a 3 or 4 hour period of time where you just sat around and drank. I was at a wedding of my niece a couple of years ago down in Kilkenny, and when the ceremony was over, which was very beautiful, it was in the place where the in the venue, and myself and my sister went up by the castle. And we walked for an hour and a half. It was the most beautiful way
Lovely
of putting
idea.
Down time.
Yeah.
And we still had plenty of time to chat to people when we came back.
Yeah.
Now, that was the night I was breathalyzed as well, of course, which was great because I hadn't drank in about 6 months. And your man
you
knew,
felt very smug.
I was
you?
As smug as could. You never saw the like of the smugness upon me.
Yeah, there is. I mean, I feel such a hypocrite saying this because, you know, the old Irish thing, I enjoy a drink myself. But Everything about Ireland, though, is about drink, isn't it?
You see, it's the universal relaxant for people, I suppose, in societies that have now expectations. But like, people are probably getting tired of the tired old concepts of going to a wedding. And it's nicer now because weddings are held under a nice tree and good luck, and do you know what I mean? Have a few things and a nice bit of food, and things are changing a little bit. Yeah. And I think it's the whole thing traditionally was that you had 4 or 5 hours where you were drinking and not really having a good lining in the stomach.
Mm.
And that's never a good idea, because it did allow people to get into probably drinking more than they should.
Mm.
And it's much better if you have a tighter celebration whereby you go to your venue, you have your service, and you have your canapés, or you have your whatever, and you have your drinks, and you have some, maybe people put on a disco or some music or whatever. But the whole way of the traditional weddings, I think, is going to hugely change, because first of all, COVID taught us a huge amount in terms of how to celebrate. I knew of a wedding that my son was at that contained 14 people. They had the best time. They had the best time because they were all sitting around the one table. The ceremony was held. It was in straight away for the food. They had drinks with it. Nobody got off their head unless they wanted to be off their head by whatever means.
Fine too, yeah.
And, you know, it was a much nicer, tighter way of doing it. So I think we need to rethink about a wedding that costs 30,000 and it's not out of the ballpark in terms of costs. Why would people even think of doing it?
I don't know. I can't.
No, I respect people that want to do it. They want the big day and the big way.
It's a lot of money, though.
It's a huge it would go so much to more practical applications. Mm. But look, there's traditions in this country, and there's diehards, and there's people then that want to see the change. This couple want to see a change, but they want to dictate that anyone coming to their wedding should be alcohol free for that day, and I don't think they're going to get buy-in for that.
I met a lady recently. She was on her way to a wedding. I met her in a shop and I said to her, "Oh great, do you enjoy weddings?" And she said when the invitation comes in the door, it's like a summons arriving.
You'd rather go down and pay the fine and be done with it. But one of the things she just said, she said, "Well, we've made the decision we don't want any alcohol at the things. I hate being around drunk people, and that's why we're not going down the traditional route." And she said, "It's our wedding, and I don't want to be forking out for something we don't drink." Like, people will bring their own alcohol. Yeah. It's not that that's going to be a cost to them. And if they're her friends, she shouldn't be dictating.
Should she rethink?
I think she should have a think about the whole thing, because the whole concept of her wedding is going to be lovely. But dictating to everyone, and by the way, it's an alcohol-free event. It's going to feel like, I mean, I have an issue with it because I think it's so strange.
And it could be lonely.
Well, she could be there with his mother.
I don't
mean
to be facetious about
no,
it, but really,
it's a strange problem to have. That they, you know, can I have an alcohol-free wedding? I would say, sure, listen, go with, be a bit more open to people having, you know, whatever it is they do to relax.
All right, if you have a problem for Phil, it's just tiptoday@tipfm.com, and we're always glad to hear from you. Phil, thanks very much.
You're so very welcome.
We'll be right back.
Join the conversation in Tipperary. Contact us through Facebook, Twitter, or email tiptoday@tipfm.com. Tip Today with Fran Curry.
With Slattery's Garage, puck on. You can't beat experience. With over 50 years maintaining Peugeot cars and vans, we like to call ourselves the experts. Call Slattery's Garage for a free vehicle health check today. 067 24111 or slatterysgarage.ie.